This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show, along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howell. I also have a special guest tonight, graduate student for the Counseling Center, Sean Stumbo. I'll probably mess up your name more. In case you don't know, the show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. You can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM, or you can listen online at wbuafm.ua.edu. You can also download the MyTuner radio app and just type in WBUAFM 90.7. I also want to solicit some ideas for future upcoming shows. We're probably in the middle of the fall semester. We've got several more shows to go until the end of this semester, but we also do about 12 or 13 shows in the spring. So if you have ideas for shows that deal with college mental health, please email those to me. The email is brainmattersradio@wbuafm.ua.edu. I'll consider using your show topic, and I'll try to remember to give out this email address periodically throughout the show. Tonight's show is one that I've wanted to do, just didn't really know how to present this as a radio show or as a podcast, but therapeutic horticulture, how plants improve your mental and physical health. And I think it's just, this is like a huge part of any advice, suggestions, recommendation that I give students when they're struggling with stress, mood issues, anxiety, you name it. And we're going to talk about some of the issues, hopefully, that therapeutic horticulture addresses. But, you know, therapeutic horticulture is rooted in the idea that interacting with plants can bring about well-being, whether it's tending a garden or just having plants in your home. And many studies have found that just being in nature, such as taking a walk through a garden, a park, a forest, can improve not only your state of mind, but your blood pressure, your heart rate, your stress hormone levels, and over time can lead to a longer life. But taking care of a plant or a garden with guidance from a therapist goes a step further. And tonight, I feel privileged to have you from the University of Florida, right? Chomp, chomp. Gator Nation in the house. My guest tonight is Leah Dial. Leah, are you a doctor? Do I need to address you as Dr. Dial?
I am not.
Is it Dial or Deal?
It's actually Deal. Lee Deal.
Dr. Deal. Leah manages the undergraduate program for horticultural therapy for the environmental horticultural program at the University of Florida, and also directs therapeutic horticultural program at Wilmot Gardens at the University of Florida. Did I say that correctly?
I believe so.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Tell the listeners, even though I've given you a long introduction, tell the listeners about yourself, your credentials, and why you're interested in this topic.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. This is an honor. And so my background in horticultural therapy started really back in the 1990s when I first kind of fell into the profession. And I didn't, to be honest with you, I didn't even know the term horticultural therapy then. I just happened to be doing it. But my professional training or my training background isn't actually in landscape architecture. And so I've always been interested, and I have an architecture degree and a landscape architecture degree, always been interested in design and the way humans experience spaces based on their design. I also happen to have a little brother who had a traumatic brain injury when he was two. And so the special education world has been a part of my life as well because of that. And I think I was always maybe in the back of my head thinking, how can I put these two things together? You know, the people that have special needs and special challenges, but also the incredible impact that space, and I came to know it, I was much more interested in outdoor space, have, you know, coming together. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from. I certainly, most of my horticulture stuff, I learned some through my landscape architecture training, but a lot of it comes through just trial and error and learning on the job.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I introduce it as therapeutic horticulture, but one of the articles I read in doing research before the show is there are two different terms. There's horticultural therapy and therapeutic horticultural. Is there a difference? And if so, what is the difference?
There is. And I'm glad you asked that because it's not clear to a lot of people. But both horticultural therapy and therapeutic horticulture use the same methods in terms of using plants, plant propagation, gardening, those kinds of things in a therapeutic way. But the difference is that when you are in a horticultural therapy program, which was the first program I did was true horticultural therapy, because every person that came to that program had an individualized treatment plan and individualized goals and objectives that we were working toward to, you know, provide reasonable challenges, improve quality of life. And so in the horticultural therapy program, we created those goals based on the individual. We documented them, measured them, adapted them as they mastered them. In therapeutic horticulture, you have goals for the group. Mm-hmm. So let's say I'm working with a group of people recovering from stroke. I might have some goals like working on eye-hand coordination, gross and fine motor skills, but I'm not individually tracking those things for each person in the group. We're kind of creating them overall for everybody because we know everybody can benefit from them and doing it more broadly, if that makes sense.
If we provided a support group here for students, for college students, would we label it therapeutic horticulture? Would that fit that criteria?
It would. And because the other thing about a horticultural therapy program is it has to be run by a horticultural therapist who has professional registration with the American Horticultural Therapy Association. Of course, that's advised with a therapeutic horticulture program as well. But I think that there certainly are other people in tandem, you know, with social workers and depending on the population that you're working with. So absolutely. And that's like our program here. We have a program for UF students mm-hmm. with stress, anxiety, depression, and that we call a therapeutic horticulture program.
There you go. That answers my question. So what are some of the benefits? I mentioned some of the problems or issues or disorders even that people could have, but you mentioned the group at UF. What are some of the issues that this works best with, or does it cover everything just about? Is there anyone who wouldn't be appropriate for a group like this?
Oh, I have yet to come across one, but of course I have not interacted with every special population out there. Mm-hmm. I do think it's very wide reaching because number one, horticulture activities are inherently meaningful. People value plants. So when you're growing plants, you are feeling like you're contributing. You feel like your existence is meaningful. You're contributing to society, you know, whether you're selling the plants or you're putting them in the garden or you're giving them as a gift. And so for that reason, I think it can really help almost every group of people to really understand the, you know, how they are part of the cycle. That makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
You, I did not know you had an architecture degree. So how helpful, I mean, that has to be helpful in just the design element of what you were talking about. But I don't know how do you persuade an employer, for instance, to buy into the idea? Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Therapeutic horticulture design.
Well, I would say, first of all, it depends on the employer. You know, if you're talking about a hospital, then sometimes the best way is to explain how something like a healing garden where therapeutic horticulture programming might take place really can help the bottom line of the hospital, because not only is it helping patients, but it's also helping the healthcare staff, the doctors, the nurses, the other direct care employees. They're getting benefit from being able to go take their breaks in the garden versus in, you know, some sterile room. And so, you know, there's a lot of really great studies out there. I don't know if you are familiar with Roger Ulrich's. That was kind of one of the seminal studies in 1984, where he looked at hospital rooms that patients that had undergone gallbladder surgery, where they were located.
Yeah.
And they found that those hospital rooms that looked out on trees, like a natural scene, those patients had shorter hospital stays. They required fewer narcotic pain medication, and they requested less attention by the staff than did those patients that looked at another brick building. So that really kind of launched a lot of this really interesting, that environmental psychology component of it as well, how the physical environment also benefits our health.
Yes.
And it all kind of ties in there together. So I think when you're thinking about trying to talk somebody into this, one of the things is to really get into that research that talks about how exposure to nature and interacting with nature really is beneficial to our health, but it's also a very low cost method to our personal wellness.
And it really is to improve immediately.
Yep.
I mean, it's something that I think the benefit would happen. It would take effect immediately. You wouldn't have to wait on it, really, you know, like medication, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, it depends on a person's situation. You know, we have groups where we're working with folks that have physical function issues.
Uh-huh.
Their mental health might be fine, but they're struggling. Maybe they're recovering from a traumatic accident or something along those lines. Sometimes those outcomes take a little bit longer, for sure. But they also are going to feel that instant boost from being in a green environment and from feeling good about what they're doing. It's going to take them a longer amount of time to recover from that stroke or that sort of thing. But certainly they're going to get that immediate boost at the moment while that's all happening.
How would you recommend someone get started with therapeutic horticulture?
Do you mean somebody that wants to run a program or somebody that wants to be in a program?
Someone who wants to be in a program.
Well, I think that's a tough one to answer because, of course, it depends on where you're located. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, these programs are not offered everywhere, but where they often can be found, I mean, there may be programs in hospitals. You know, we've got some programs here at University of Florida. There are other hospitals around the country that do offer these. So if you are associated with a hospital, you could look to see, do they have some kind of a program? But we also are finding more and more programs popping up in botanic gardens. So, you know, I'm trying to think if the Birmingham one has a botanic, I believe they might have a program there.
Birmingham Botanical Garden. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of other really great, the Chicago Botanic Garden, Denver Botanic Garden, Atlanta, all of them, they have these wonderful programs. So that's another way, if you're not necessarily associated with the healthcare facility at that time, to get involved.
What about, are many universities offering therapeutic horticulture programs?
I think most of the universities are offering an educational program so that you could get I don't know that there's any programs offering a degree right now, but like us, we at University of Florida, we have a certificate program. Uh-huh. It's a 12 credit hour program for both traditional students and what we call non-degree seeking students. There are some programs like that. I know University of Tennessee has one where you go, some are in person, ours is online, and you can get that training. Now, there are some universities like, again, University of Florida also has ongoing therapeutic horticulture programming. I believe University of Tennessee does as well. And so sometimes they go hand in hand, sometimes they're separate.
Yeah. What about personalities and specific people, specific diagnosis, specific disorders? What personalities or people with certain disorders, what does therapeutic horticulture work best with? Does it work best with someone like, for instance, a college student with, would it be depression or stress? What have you seen the most benefit with what disorder? And I've just totally screwed that question up.
I know what you're getting at. That's another big question. And I guess I can tell you empirically what we have found through our research here at University of Florida. And we just actually have finished up a research project for university students. And this is everyone from freshmen to PhD students. I think we even had a postdoc in our program over three semesters. And we found that those UF students that participated in 8 sessions, therapeutic horticulture sessions, so that's like an hour and a half once a week.
Okay.
We found across the board statistically significant decreases in stress and anxiety and statistically significant increases in general resilience and academic resilience.
Wow.
So we're in the process of preparing that manuscript. And we were looking at mental health. We weren't looking at physical health with that group. So that was really wonderful. And gosh, I got to tell you, just the testimonials, the students had an opportunity to write some free form stuff in the exit survey. Mm-hmm. It it was so energizing for me and made me feel so good about what we were able to provide to these students. Just the feedback that we got about how the program changed their lives. Yeah,
that's amazing. Well, I can only imagine. I mean, it's true. And it's hard to convince some of these students, though, just to like go for a walk. Sometimes it really is. But then when they come back, it sounds very simplistic, you know, and I think when they come to the counseling center, they're wanting a magic like strategy. And when you tell them you need to get outside a little bit more, they're like, what? You know, but it works. And there's research to back it up. So
there is. And I think what we found with students is they want a little more structure. And one of the things that we do in our therapeutic horticulture program for students is we partner with the Counseling and Wellness Center. Uh-huh. So we, most sessions we have a psychologist or a social worker come over, and we intentionally teach a different wellness strategy to the students every week. Uh-huh. You know, it could be mindfulness or an anxiety reduction technique, so that over the course of the semester, hopefully students will have, you know, they'll be able to grab onto 3, 4, 5 of those things that work for them. And so it's, you know, they could read about all this on their own, but that's hard to do. And so by having that structure and then combining an activity that they feel really positive about, I think it helps. It helps it kind of sink in a little bit more for them.
And I think it helps with their self-esteem and feeling a sense of accomplishment, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a stress reliever, for sure. It gives that focusing on the plant means they get to take the focus off themselves for a little while.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, I think Sean's got a question for you. And we might take one or two email questions if you're up for that, okay? All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther. We're talking tonight with Leah Deal. She is really the director of the Therapeutic Horticultural Program at the University of Florida. And I've never really met anybody or talked to anybody who has this dream job, in my opinion. I think it's a dream job. Joining me tonight is a graduate student who's working with us here at the Counseling Center. He's working on his doctorate in counselor education, and his name is Sean Stumbo, and Sean has questions for Leah, but also he's interested in doing a group here. Hopefully we'll get this off the ground sometime this semester or next semester just for this, really where we just utilize nature as a stress reliever or just some sort of therapeutic function for students here in Alabama. So Sean, take it away. What question do you have?
Right. Leah, you know, I find your background in architecture fascinating. Could you tell us more about the design itself of a therapeutic horticultural program and what kind of environment that these clients might be participating in?
Sure. You know, it's interesting because I went into architecture, as I mentioned earlier, because I really was kind of interested in the impact that space and has on our emotions, our happiness, our experiences in that space. I learned about landscape architecture in architecture school, and I realized that's what I'm really interested in because I'm much more interested in the dynamics of the outdoors where things are moving and changing and growing. So I think that when you're thinking about therapeutic horticulture programs, of course, the ideal space is a garden, a beautiful garden, or we're lucky here to have a beautiful greenhouse and a beautiful garden. But it's not necessary because I think, and this is actually a research study I would love to do at some point, is how much does the setting matter, you know, compared to the actual activities that you're doing and the way that you set up the program. Yeah. And so I do think that one of the keys is that when people are put into green dominated spaces, their physiology. It's just they automatically start to de-stress and have a sense of mental fatigue restoration and those kinds of things. There's something about nature that we're still teasing out, but that does that for us. We know that by research. Heart rates go down, blood pressure goes down, cortisol level goes down when you're immersed in green space. So of course, that's going to help if you're trying to work with a client group that really is dealing with stress and anxiety. But at the same time, I think you could have a classroom where you're bringing plants in and they're working with soil and live plants and all the things that go along with that. And they're still going to experience a lot of that stress reduction through that active participation. So, and that's one of the things we talk about both with healing garden design, but also therapeutic horticulture is the difference between active participation and passive participation. You know, are you just kind of walking through a garden, enjoying the views and getting those sensations, which is really a positive thing to do? Or are you actually actively interacting with nature and plants through some hands-on activities? Both are important.
You mentioned healing garden. Are there different types, subtypes of gardens that are therapeutic?
Yes, absolutely. And I actually wrote a paper on this whole subject.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. And there are. And I kind of put it together almost as a family tree in a sense. So at the very top.
No pun intended.
Yeah, that's right. No pun intended. But for me, at the very top would be a category called landscapes for health. And then under that one category, a big category would be healing gardens. Next to that would be healing landscapes, you know, because of course gardens are something that we've manipulated in some way. And then under that healing garden category, we're going to see all sorts of things, restorative gardens, hospice gardens, recovery gardens. I mean, it goes on and on. And I actually think of this as probably too much for right now, but thinking them divided in terms of a restorative experience or an enabling experience. So a horticultural therapy garden would really fall under the enabling part of that, the branch of that tree, because in order to be therapeutic, especially for people with physical disabilities, it needs to be accessible to them. So there are a lot, you know, you could have your contemplation garden or your meditation garden, and they all have slightly different design intents. And based on the user and what the purpose is, they're a little bit different. And of course, there's going to be a ton of overlap as well.
How much creativity do you have to have? Do you have to be a creative person to do this?
Yes and no. I mean,
you sound very creative.
I think if you're going to be a landscape architect and do garden design, then yes, creativity helps a lot, but it's something you can learn. I think for a therapeutic horticulture programming, the creativity is important in terms of thinking about solutions. You know, if you have a particular person, student, older adult, that's just not responding or not, maybe more so not engaging, you sometimes need to be very creative with the ways that you solve that problem. So the activities can be creative, but also how you are reaching certain people.
Let's take our the first email question, okay? And I'm reading over it right now. I don't think we've really talked about the specific plants that she asked. Are there specific plants that you suggest for a beginner to start with? As you advance as a good plant caretaker, are there specific plants you recommend that have more mental benefits, such as smells, texture, etc.?
That's a really great question. Mm-hmm. And of course, it depends a little bit on where you live in the country, of course. We're lucky down here in Florida and you guys as well to have a pretty temperate climate. So the thing that I'm always looking for in a plant that I'm going to use in one of my programs is that it has at least one sensory quality and maybe even more. So, you know, it could smell good. It could be fuzzy. It could have bright colors, some kind of an interesting texture. It could propagate easily as well. And so that I'm kind of looking for some of those things because that's going to help draw people in. If I can hand somebody a really cool plant because of one of those qualities, they're going to be much more likely to engage with me and with that plant and with the program. That being said, you know, it does take a while to, if you're a newbie at this, and I'd say that some of the easy plants are certainly succulents can be very easy.
Oh, yeah.
interesting as long as you aren't a heavy waterer. That's the only problem. And they also grow at dinosaur time. So be patient, but they have some amazing qualities. Things like pothos, golden pothos epipremnum, that's a really easy one to propagate. You know, if you're ever looking at a plant and you see things that look like roots sticking out of the above ground part, that's a pretty good sign that's going to be an easy one to grow because the roots are already getting going and it's going to help you along. Of course, we always need to be careful about toxic plants. And, you know, if you're working with a population that might put things in their mouths or touch their eyes, then, you know, of course, not using toxic plants altogether is the best option. But, you know, almost all plants have some aspect to them that we need to be careful about.
Yeah. So just no jalapeno peppers. Just speaking from experience.
That's right. But edibles can be a fantastic thing to do. Herbs, you know, they smell great. We can cook with them. We can make teas. So stuff like that.
That's cool. I love talking about that. What about you? I think in the research I read about you when I was stalking you, basically, I read that you worked with the National Parks Board of Singapore.
Yes.
To bring therapeutic gardens and horticulture to their citizens. I want to know more about that. How did you get involved? Did you actually go over there? Did you spend time there? What did you do? I mean, this is a whole nother show.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I have to tell you, if you ever get a chance to go to Singapore, you got to go. Oh, it's an amazing country.
It sounds like it. I've seen videos. They are doing exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, they are. And they really understand the value of nature. You know, Singapore is a tiny little island. They have a gigantic population, but they have figured out how to include green space in that very dense urban place. And one of the things I got hooked up with them as a kind of visiting scholar with the National Parks Board to go over and kind of consult with them on the introduction of therapeutic horticulture to Singapore. One of the things they were very interested in doing is creating therapeutic gardens, because in Singapore, people live in very tall buildings, hundreds and hundreds of people. They could be up, you know, on floor 69 and getting them outside, especially when they're older adults, was a challenge. So they were really focusing on older adults to begin, get them out, get them talking to each other, get them active and healthier. So they have this initiative of building 40 therapeutic gardens around the country over, I can't remember if it's by 2030, but so far I believe 9 have been built. So I was, as a landscape architect, was able to help consult on the design of many of those, and I'm just seeing them pop up. It's just,
oh wow,
this would take decades in the United States. Yes. So it's really cool to see.
That's amazing. This is a broad question. I realize this. How do you change the culture because I feel like you said the magic phrase, they value nature over there. And I don't believe some of our communities in the United States value that as much. Obviously, they whack down trees and build, you know, concrete parking decks. How do you change the culture to get people to appreciate or accept what you're talking about?
Well, I will say, I think COVID helped us with that, because I do think that one of the silver linings of COVID was that people kind of fled to the outdoors to get out of their houses that they were stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. And so that, I think people have a little more personal experience with it than they used to, whether they recognize it or not. I think from a grassroots standpoint, getting people trying it, you know, when we're trying to work with a new department, say a new medical department, getting their staff and doctors into our space and doing a therapeutic horticulture program with them helps them to really understand it. You know, it sounds like it's something people should understand, but when they actually get their hands in there and doing it themselves, it opens up the world for them. The other end of the spectrum is research. We have to have more research on how this is working. Like, you know, the research I mentioned here at University of Florida, get that done, get it published so that we're working from the insurance company side of things as well.
How long has, what's the history behind therapeutic horticulture? You talk about needing more research. How old is this concept?
Well, the idea kind of goes back to ancient Egypt when we're thinking about people using gardens and outdoor spaces for mental health. But We do know that horticultural therapy first kind of was used during World War I and World War II as first as kind of a leisure activity for soldiers with, you know, different kinds of injuries and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And after World War II, it was actually being used as a diagnostic rehabilitatively as well. And so it kind of grew from there. New York, the Rusk Institute in New York City was one of the first places to really use that diagnostically as well. And it's kind of grown from there.
Yeah, I read in one of the articles I read, it talked about the history of gardens for the purpose of therapy for veterans.
Yes.
Like that's a very big area. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, Sean may have another question. I know we've got another email question we may or may not have answered, and so stay with us. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
You're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther. We're talking tonight about therapeutic horticulture. And if you don't know what that is, you need to Google it because it's a fascinating field. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to utilize gardening for therapeutic purposes, whether it's mental or physical. Leah Deal is joining us from the University of Florida, where she heads up the program there for therapeutic horticulture. It's amazing to me. I mean, you said there's a certificate that's offered online. How long does it take someone to get the certificate?
A year minimum, and most of our students probably take it in about a year and a half.
What are the minimum requirements?
You just need to have 1 year of college. You don't have to have any background in horticulture or so, you know, human
or architecture.
Or architecture. Yeah, so we take just about everybody. And it's interesting, and we have a good mixture. I'd say 60% of our students are working professionals. It could be horticulture, could be social work, something along those lines. And they're looking for something to add to their toolbox.
Well, and that was my next question. Like, what kinds of jobs do you see therapeutic horticulturalists doing? You know, like you get the certificate, what literally could you do with it?
So I think there's some different options. You can go kind of the academic route like I've done, I guess, both academic and practice. There's also more facilities recognizing the value of something like this. So any kind of vocational training for people with developmental disabilities or things along those lines, they're often incorporating horticulture, therapeutic horticulture into those programs. Hospitals, of course, I think we're seeing more recognition there for running patient programs. The VA is starting to open up. I mean, they've actually been doing this for a long time, but they haven't used the term horticultural therapist necessarily. It's been kind of run through some of the rec therapy programs. So I think there's a lot of opportunities growing there as well. And, you know, a lot of my students have an idea for a program. They work through it through our courses, and then they go in their community and to an organization and say, hey, I've got this idea. I want you to give me a try.
Yeah.
If they're armed with research and a good plan, you know, assisted living facilities are another great example, then oftentimes they get a chance to prove that.
Do you ever see university counseling centers doing this?
With
a certified therapeutic horticulturalist.
Yeah, I do think that the counseling centers are starting to do more green activities. And so I think they're ripe for a situation like this at a school that doesn't yet have a therapeutic horticulture program. Mm-hmm. And actually, given the research that I discussed earlier, my next big step I hope to do is do a multi-site study where we can look at other universities beyond University of Florida and see, do we get the same results there? Because again, as we said, this is a low-cost alternative to help people and to help take some of the burden off the counseling centers, which are terribly overburdened at universities.
Low cost and high payoff. I mean, it would be a high payoff. And I think the research would show that. I mean, I'm predicting with the research.
Yeah.
I think it would.
Well,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I am so excited to be able to tell you that based on, and we've been pushing at this for a while, but based on the findings that we had at our student program, we just have had a presidential initiative, strategic initiative, some funding go out at University of Florida. And our student therapeutic horticulture program was just given $475,000 over the next 3 years to expand our program.
How can you sleep at night?
I know. I'm so excited about that because I think, you know, that will, number one, allow us to treat more students and serve them and help them on their journey for their personal wellness, but also hopefully to be able to demonstrate and spread the word to other universities.
Definitely. So, I think Sean's got another question for you.
Yeah, Lee, you know, you described the social benefits, you know, people being in a community, talking with each other, working together in the garden. You've also described, you know, a physical activity, you know, maybe geriatric patients going out, using their bodies, getting out of the bed. I'm wondering other benefits there are to this kind of therapy, and maybe there's sort of like a meaningfulness to it. You know, imagining that these patients are growing life, and they're witnessing the life cycle, you know, and being outside and seeing nature, you know, is there a sort of kind of spiritual aspect to all this?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that's going to take different forms depending on your personal spirituality. But definitely, I think just kind of feeling connected to nature and connected to the, you know, power of Mother Nature and those kinds of things can really help a lot. And I did want to also mention another big area that therapeutic horticulture can help with is cognitive function as well. So, you know, a lot of the groups, whether you're working with somebody with stroke or traumatic brain injury, or even I was just working today with somebody with Parkinson's disease, you know, unfortunately, one of the symptoms of that is that you just start to decline cognitively and sort of struggle with organization and some of those things. So using some very basic activities in horticulture, today I was having him count out some pots for me, or to kind of figure out what order should we do this activity? Do we mix the soil first? Do we take the cuttings first? So that he can kind of exercise that brain elasticity a little bit and try to maintain as long as we can some of that cognitive function. So there's some really neat stroke programs and traumatic brain injury programs using horticultural therapy.
Do you ever, this may be an odd question, but have you ever seen like MRI pictures or images after experiencing like therapeutic horticultural gardening?
That's a great question, because actually one of our graduate students did her study. She was a horticulture student and she did a concentration in horticultural therapy. Her master's research project was looking at fMRI before and after participation in 12 sessions of therapeutic horticulture. And they did see a difference. I am not a brain expert, so I'll probably chop this up. But I think we all expected that we'd see things light up that indicated activity and energy and things like that. And actually, the areas that lit up were more the calming, that sort of relaxation areas that indicated that, which makes sense as well. But so, yes, there is a little bit of that out there.
It's like definitive proof you can see on an image, which is what people want usually. This is another maybe untalked about question, I guess, if that's a word. What about if somebody has a plant that they're caring for in a facility, or let's say even here at a counseling center, and the plant dies? Let's say they're dealing with grief or, you know, loss or something like that, loss of a loved one or something. Like, would you recommend therapeutic horticulture for somebody like that? Do you feel like it would be, you know, hard for them to deal with? It may sound very elementary, but if that plant dies, do you think that they, have you ever seen it be very dramatic for them?
Sure. And I think that's a really important thing to think about. And I think this is where having some counseling background helps a lot. I actually have two students right now that are both working on an independent study project for therapeutic horticulture for people experiencing grief. And one of the things that we do, because, you know, you could be experiencing severe grief, or you could just be frustrated that your plant died. One of the things we really try to stress in all of our programs is that, you know what? plants are plants, and we may do everything right, and they still, you know, it's the environment that they don't like.
Yes.
And so understanding that it's not always going to go the way we want, but rather than being upset about that, hey, let's turn that into an interesting educational opportunity and try to figure out what went wrong, dissect that plant. And so rather than it being a failure, it's becoming a learning experience that we can grow from, in a sense. And of course, there's all sorts of metaphors that you can make, the cycle of life, all that kind of stuff that some people really like, other people don't really like that. So knowing your clients makes a big difference, but that is going to happen. But I do think that's an important part of the whole process.
Sean's got another question for you. He's bumping me. Okay, go.
You know, I like horticulture now, but I grew up as a city slicker. And so I'm wondering, you know, do you have to already have a pre-existing interest in plants or gardening to be successful as a participant in, you know, these kinds of programs?
Absolutely not. And sometimes it's more fun if you don't, because, you know, one of the things we talk about is that sense of awe, that sense of wonder about the natural world. And, you know, I've seen probably hundreds of thousands of little seedlings sprout, and I'm still in awe every time I see one.
Yes.
So I think we do have to convince a lot of people that it's okay if they have a black thumb, they don't have to have a green thumb, but you got to give it a chance. It's like medicine. If you don't take it, you're not going to get the benefit. So our trick sometimes is figuring out how to talk people into giving it a chance, and then we can help them grow.
It's so true. It's so neat seeing that for the first time in somebody who's always thought that they couldn't grow something, and the first time they actually produce something, it's a good feeling.
Yep. Absolutely.
The email question I mentioned, we've already answered it. Basically, what mental health benefits in general are there when interacting with the natural world? And we kind of addressed that at the very beginning. I think we're going to take our last break. And then when we come back, I've got a question about any resources that you have for listeners. And I've got another question, too, about skepticism. So okay. Stay tuned. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about therapeutic horticulture and how plants can help improve mental and physical health. My guest is Leah Deal. Leah is the director of the Therapeutic Horticultural Program at the University of Florida. And this has been an exciting hour, and it's gone by so fast. And one of the questions I have is, you know, how do you address, or have you ever had people who are skeptical about the, you know, the credibility of this type of therapy?
Yes, in the sense that, let's say that I am trying to get a program started, and we're trying to reach out to a new population, and I need to get some medical staff on board. Mm-hmm. You know, that might take some convincing, but fortunately, there's more research that I can point to, and that helps. And now that we've developed our own research, that helps a lot as well. I think that when we're thinking about the actual people that we're working with, you know, I mentioned somebody saying, oh, I can't, everything I grow, I kill. That skepticism we run into a fair amount, but we can usually overcome that. You know, I might even, if somebody says, no, I really don't want to even touch the plants, I say, well, will you just come and hang out with us and talk? And then they get comfortable, and they start to like the group. And then maybe the next thing I know, they're kind of looking at a plant. And so it's, which is great. I would never say I told you so. I wouldn't do that. But, you know, so I think there's ways to kind of overcome that.
That's cool. How about any resources, any, you know, podcasts, any books, any websites for listeners who are interested, besides your website and the certification that you mentioned?
Sure. Yeah. One fairly new website and that I was involved in putting together that actually received an award from the American Horticultural Therapy Association is called the Florida Horticulture for Health Network.
Okay.
FLHHN.org. It's a free resource. We have webinars, we have forums, we have a really great thing called the Resource Hub that has all sorts, everything from research to videos to all sorts of stuff. It's a great place for somebody to explore because all the ways horticulture and health intersect, well, most of the ways are on there and they can kind of search based on that. So that's a fantastic resource. And it's useful to, you don't have to be in Florida for it to be useful to you. The American Horticultural Therapy Association is another great place to go, especially if you're kind of interested in learning more about training opportunities or, it does list educational opportunities, but just kind of what this is about, history, who's doing it, some things like that. There is another podcast actually called The Aha Moment from some of my colleagues. And this, it's really a fun one. There are talking to horticultural therapists and horticultural therapy practitioners about how did you come to realize that this is what you wanted to do? What
was that
moment? So yeah, that's kind of a fun one to listen to because I think you kind of realize what different people are doing and how they're thinking about that horticulture for health intersection. And then, the other thing you can do is just Google healing gardens or Google therapeutic use or gardening therapy, just terms like that. And you'll be amazed at the programs that pop up and the, activities. Yeah. One more thing to mention is we're working on it right now. We're going to be launching another free database. It's called the Therapeutic Horticulture Activity Database. That's going to be available through the University of Florida website. And that'll be a database of activities that can be used therapeutically. That'll be divided by population type or goal type, some things like that. And I think it'll be useful for people in all different kinds of professions that are looking to do activities with clients. So I'm hoping that in the next month that'll be live.
Wow, that'd be great. There's a lot of resources. I'm really kind of surprised. When are you going to write your book?
Maybe I can get a sabbatical or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But that would be really cool about how just your history of how you found this as a profession and all that's going on right now with the research and the future of therapeutic horticulture as a program, as a profession, even.
It's exciting. I feel like this is the time that people are starting to recognize the power of this. And whether they're doing it on their own personally or they're joining some kind of a program,
yes.
People are more aware.
This is wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show. As I said just a minute ago, it goes by really fast, especially
yes.
if you're interested in the topic. And I am so interested in the topic. So thank you for being on the show. And I know it's an hour later in Gainesville. So thank you for staying a little later.
Oh, of course. I love talking about this. And I really appreciate you inviting me. Thank you.
Sure. Let me make a few announcements. Don't forget our shows are recorded and podcasted on Apple Podcasts, audioboom.com, and voices.ua.edu. Just type in Brain Matters, you'll find some of our past shows. There's also a link to voices.ua.edu on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. As always, I like to thank some of the people who've made my show possible. Dr. Greg Vanderwall, he's executive director at the Counseling Center. My producer, Catherine Howell, my colleagues at the Counseling Center, the WVUA staff who edit our show every week, and my guest tonight, Leah Deal. Join us next week. We're going to have another interesting topic, educating students about what is a mental health crisis, and that's going to be with our executive director, Dr. Greg Vanderwall. So tune in next week, same time, same place. You've been listening to Brain Matters. Thanks again for listening. Good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.